Welcome to Ad Exchanger Talks, the podcast devoted to examining the issues and trends in advertising and marketing technology that matter most to you.
This episode is brought to you by 4C, the inventors of scope. What is scope, you say? How about audiences, activation, and analytics all in one self-serve platform? Yes, that's three A's from 4C. It's all in scope. Check out 4cinsights.com/adexchangertalks to learn more. That's the number 4, letter C, insights.com/adexchangertalks.
Hello, everyone. This is Zach Rogers. I'm the executive editor of Ad Exchanger. And I'm pleased to welcome Bob Arnold from Google to the podcast. Bob is the North America digital strategy and media lead for Google, where he drives the digital marketing strategy for all Google products. He was among the very first brand marketers to embrace programmatic vocally, publicly, during his time at Procter & Gamble and later at Kellogg. He's just a great thinker and innovator in the marketing discipline, and I'm super pleased to have him here. Welcome, Bob.
Thank you so much for having me, and good thing this is audio because you're making me blush a bit.
And listeners, I'm sorry to tell you, we're not going to get deeply into issues around Google's ad platform business. I think we should say that up front. That includes the controversial changes the company has made to comply with GDPR. Since Bob is a marketer at Google and not involved in ads or ad platforms, he's not really authorized to speak publicly on those topics. But if you listen to the episode backwards, you'll hear a coded analysis. We kind of worked that into our questions and answers. So
it took a couple takes.
So before we talk about Google, let's talk about you, Bob. You're from Cincinnati, is that right?
Kind of. Okay. I lived there most of my life, but I tell everyone I'm from San Francisco because I was born there.
Okay.
I'm not a Bengals fan. I'm a Niners fan. So
yeah, okay.
We've had some lean years, though, here lately.
Got it. So born in San Francisco, and yep, you're back there now. That's interesting. We'll talk about that. But Cincinnati is where you started your career in marketing.
Yeah. So just looking back, started at Procter & Gamble, and I was actually an engineer by trade. So I went into the IT department, but quickly, even though it is an awesome function, moved into digital marketing and had just the greatest opportunities there. Worked on a project called Homemade Simple, which was in the home care division, and that was eventually turned into a TV show. So it was really interesting to watch. And then from there, I had what I consider probably my best job ever. I moved into feminine care. I worked on Always and Tampax and a program called beinggirl.com. Worked in the FemCare building, and there weren't a whole lot of men there.
Can imagine.
Yes, and luckily, P&G is an equal opportunity employer, so equal number of bathrooms, which meant pretty much all the men had their own bathroom, which was nice.
Sweet.
Yeah, and then from there, went to oral care, and then had the opportunity to move up north to Michigan, to Battle Creek, and went to Kellogg.
For some reason, I thought you had worked on diapers as well.
Nope.
You never did.
Nope.
Okay. Okay.
Never part of there. But I should say, when I was at P&G in oral care, 2008, 2009 was when the first inception of Hawkeye came out.
Right.
I'm probably going to be one of the few digital people from P&G you'll ever meet who won't claim to have invented it. But I know the guys who did. I was sort of a customer of them. And my really good friend, Raman, named Hawkeye. And when he was in the digital group, Raman, he named all of our secret projects after Marvel comic superheroes. So
okay.
Hawkeye being one of them.
Got it.
Green Lantern and others were there too.
Okay, interesting little backstory there. Okay, so yeah, and Hawkeye, for those who don't know, many will, was P&G's kind of super secret programmatic initiative.
Yep.
Very early in programmatic, 2008.
Yep.
Where they partnered with Right Media, right?
Yep.
And Audience Science.
Yep.
And decided they were going to sort of figure out what this whole exchange buying world was about.
Yeah.
And was that your first exposure to programmatic?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay.
I think it was probably most people. It was before it was called programmatic. right? Mm-hmm. So Ted McConnell and Randy Peterson were really the two brains behind it, and is sort of carried on by Stan Houston later. So it's amazing. And, you know, those guys, I can tell you with Stan and Ted, they were in front of so many other digital things. So I've been around for a while. So they were ahead of search even before Google came around. They knew that would be a big thing. They were really big into CRM programs and things like that, which is why P&G was so powerful in those areas back in the early 2000s. Mm-hmm. So moved on to Kellogg and had the opportunity to work under GSD, John Suarez Davis, who—
Yes, previous guest on the program.
Exactly, and which was amazing. He really gave our organization just this latitude to experiment and to try new things. And also, one of my best friends moved up from Cincinnati, Aaron Fetters, and joined the team and worked with him and Gail
Smilinich. Now at Comscore.
And Gail Smilinich as well. We were sort of this crew really looking to do interesting things in digital. And while we were there, our CMO at the time really wanted to bring Kellogg marketing to the forefront in digital. So he really encouraged us to, Mark Baines really encouraged us to move forward and to sort of like spread the gospel of programmatic.
And it was kind of gospel. It was kind of a religious experience for many in marketing. Like, it was a new system.
Yes.
It really kind of like it replaced rather than adopted the old rules of marketing, right? Like, in a way.
Yeah, I mean, for me, it was, you know, I'm still dyed in the wool CPG marketer. Don't tell my boss. So, you know, marketing is marketing, and what's great about programmatic is, in my mind, is it just enables scale and mass personalization that we've never had before. So, in a lot of ways, it's just making the whole notion of, you know, right person, right time, right message actually come true. And so, I mean, we still have ways to go a bit in that space, but I think this is the big leap to that.
Right. So. It was exciting because you could buy more efficiently. You're reaching only the people who you want to reach.
Sure.
And therefore, you can deliver them a creative message that's likely to be more effective. Although, arguably, the industry has fallen down on the creative side and not really fulfilled on that promise yet.
Yeah. I think for me, that is the big opportunity. And having the opportunity to work at, you know, a couple of companies who are big digital marketers, you know, the issue, I think, is actually a structural issue. So you really have, on the one hand, the brand marketers, the folks who look after insights and creative, and then you have more of the media practitioners and the people who really understand this space. And what sort of happened is that they are in these silos. Often the brand marketers report into the business, and you know, the media practitioners are more centralized. And so I think the real challenge is bringing those two worlds together and making that work better.
And over the course of your time at P&G and then Kellogg, you developed a relationship with Google.
Yeah.
Great source of media, important company in the industry. And then they vacuumed you right out of Michigan in the Midwest.
Yeah, I mean, it was a great opportunity, and
now that was 5 years ago almost, right?
Yeah, 4.5
okay,
years ago.
Got it.
I, you know, as I said, I'm from San Francisco, even though I was there for less than a year of my life. So I always said I would go move back to San Francisco.
Back to your roots.
Back to my roots. And, you know, I ended up in Cincinnati for over 10 years after college. And so I was like, well, I should probably try to go.
What appealed to you about Google?
I mean, it's sort of Google, right?
Yeah.
You know, there's sort of limitless opportunity, experimentation, and definitely, you know, some of the more iconic marketing in the recent years has come from Google. So I was definitely inspired by that as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, from a creative standpoint, yes, fantastic. And then what products? They have You know, from search to
Chromebook is one. I have to give out shout out to my wife who works on that.
Let's just run through some of these products. Go ahead. Your wife works on Chromebook?
Yeah.
Okay.
So she's a business lead on that. And then, you know, I'm a huge fan of Pixel phone. I have the Pixel 2, which is amazing. And then Chrome browser as well. So
Sure.
Just across the board.
Yeah, of course. I mean, YouTube.
Yeah.
Maps, Waze.
Yeah, Maps. Amazing. So
yeah.
That's how I got here.
Right on. And many of these products are billion-plus user products. That's one of the remarkable things about Google's own brands is we like to talk about the internet giants. But most huge tech companies have, you know, a small, let one hand, you can count them on one hand, the number of really scaled, immense products. Google, you can count them. It takes at least two hands, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think one of the things that I've seen, I read years ago about Google and rings true today is it's the user first. You know, it's really create great products for users and they will come for that, and then everything also sort of sort itself out.
Right. Yes. So, what is Google's history as a marketer of its own products? This is a company from an advertising standpoint, it's known for lower funnel, last click type advertising.
Sure.
But it's not how it necessarily has behaved as a brand. Or as a marketer.
Yeah. I mean, I'm probably not the best historian of...
You're all I got.
So. Yeah, exactly. of what's gone on. But I think, you know, for me, the big shift has really been, you know, obviously Google has a large advertising business. But now really going into the consumer side, it's really shifted, you know, a lot of the focus of the company and certainly of investment. And so it's really about, you know, how do we expand people's thoughts around the Google brand and really make it, you know, continue to make it one of the most beloved brands of the world while introducing new products and new ideas.
Mm-hmm. Okay, got it. Talk a little bit about partners.
Sure.
How do you think about agencies and other partners in the ecosystem?
Yeah. So we have two agencies. We work with Essence on the digital side. They've been with Google for a long time before I came, and PhD as well for more of the offline side. And so, you know, my team, I'm part of a bigger organization that looks after all media on behalf of Google. I look after the digital brand side. And, you know, we have great relationships with both our agencies and, you know, they work really well together. So it's been great.
Okay. When you say both sides, you mean
both Essence and PhD.
Both Essence and PhD. Got it. Okay, got it. Do you see a Google as a customer to agencies for the long haul? I mean, is there always going to be a place for these kinds of partners?
Yeah, I think so. We definitely believe in the model. They bring, you know, a certain level of expertise to the table. And a different perspective as well.
Reality check?
Reality check, maybe, but also just, like, we work with really smart people.
You got so many geniuses on staff. It's kind of like, do you really need it? But
I think for us, you know, folks at Essence, like...
They're geniuses, too.
Yeah, exactly. And so just a different perspective and, you know, sort of helping us get out of just focusing on, you know, what's going on, what's the latest in hardware, for example, to thinking broader. You know, they have other clients and just other perspectives as well. I think it's really, really great.
Okay. Got it. I'm not going to ask you to reveal Google's marketing secrets, but how do you think about the media mix, for example, and how do you optimize across channels?
Sure.
What are the fundamentals of your strategy?
Yeah, I mean, I can definitely talk about this. It's pretty high level, but I think very effective. You know, in previous lives, and maybe it's just more of a sign of the times and things have changed, I think there is sometimes a mindset of it's, you know, offline or digital, and it could get tricky in that regard. But I think it's really, how do you have, you know, both work together? Like, what's the strengths from each? So, for example, video, sight, sound, and motion, it's an incredible opportunity to tell stories, to make that emotional connection, to really build your brand. And then, you know, you look at something like digital display as mm-hmm. one example, opportunity to, you know, be contextually relevant, become more personal, maybe more opportunity to do more creative because you can do it quicker, you can do it cheaper, and to really, you know, start delivering the right message because you can start building those things out. And really bringing those two things together, I think, really allows marketers to bring people down the funnel. And so it's no longer an either or, it's how do they work best together. And, you know, depending on your objectives, you can lean into one more than the other.
Okay, great. We're going to take a moment's break, hear from a sponsor, then we'll be back with Bob Arnold. I'm pleased to have Lance Neuhauser, CEO at 4C Insights, back in the studio, this time as a sponsor. Thank you for that, Lance.
Great to be here. Thanks for having me back.
Let's have a broad question for anyone who didn't hear your earlier episode. What's 4C?
Yeah, 4C is first and foremost a global data science and marketing technology company. We work with a variety of brands, agencies, media owners, to help them reach audiences across screens. And we're really proud of the fact that we enable self-service activation across Apple News, Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn, NBC Universal, Pinterest, Snapchat, and Twitter. And we also enable TV synced ads via display, search, social, and video. And we're pretty proud of the scale at which we're doing this. We're seeing nearly $2 billion in annualized advertising spend running through our platform.
Okay, great. Now, you all recently introduced a self-serve product called Scope. What's that all about? Talk about that.
Scope by 4C is the first self-service platform to unify audience intelligence, activation, and analytics across TV, social, digital, and mobile marketplaces. And it really focuses on four key capabilities that are necessary to help marketers be successful. First, you have to be able to reach your audience, the ability to meaningfully reach your audience in a brand-safe, premium environment. The second is, we know that consumers are only open to messages at certain moments nowadays, and therefore you have to understand frequency and timing at a whole new level, and we provide multi-screen allocation and synchronization to eliminate waste and eliminate message fatigue while maximizing impact. Third, aside from knowing where to reach them and when to reach them, you have to know what to say to them, so engagement is key. We provide a clear view into consumer preference and market forces influencing your audience, and of course, it all comes down to the bottom line. We provide measurement and attribution and really actionable insights into what does and does not resonate with your target using first and third-party data to fuel real-time campaign optimization.
All right, good stuff. Thank you, Lance. All right, we're back with Bob from Google. So, you know, Google has many scaled products, as we were discussing. When you think about objectives for marketing, how much of your thinking is going into, let's maintain a strong brand and make sure we're in the front of people's minds, versus let's get the next billion users using this product for the first time, if that makes sense?
Sure.
Acquisition versus loyalty.
Sure. I think, you know, our CMO, Lorraine, she always says job one is to build the brand. And so everything we do has to have that lens. We're not going to make any sort of compromises or take any shortcuts to try to drive growth or something along those lines. It's very important to us. It's you know, definitely the thing that marketing stands for, and the halo effect is obviously tremendous.
Mm-hmm. Okay, got it. So brand. One more question on Google before we talk about some broader industry issues. what might it surprise a listener to hear about Google's marketing team, like, in terms of how you operate or what you... Well, what makes you tick?
I mean, I think from my standpoint, the thing that surprised me most, when I came to Google, you know, I didn't actually know much about the marketing org other than, you know, these fantastic spots, my team, and things along those lines. So I just always assumed marketing, not in CPG, would be regulated to advertising and, you know, it's just paid media and things along that line. But Google Marketing is so much more than that. I'm really proud to say that I'm part of an organization that touches all corners of Google, from the logo to product design, user flow, on, you know, all of our apps, hardware even. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Google Marketing represents our users, and we bring that to the we bring that perspective to the table, and so it's been great to watch.
How do you actually leverage those assets? Because it seems like the internal resources available to you are immense, and it might actually become a little bit unwieldy. Like, how do you bring the UX people and the engineers and the ads people and the these other kind of components of this organization into play? And do you have a system for leveraging their abilities, or is it kind of just depends on the needs of the campaign?
I mean, you know, marketing does own campaigns front to end. I mean, we have, you know, business stakeholders and things along those lines. We report into the CMO directly, overall. And so, you know, we have tons of resources, but also I would say, you know, coming from CPG, Google moves pretty fast. You know, I always like to say Google moves as fast as a software engineer can program, and Google has fast typers, let's say. And so, you know, so we're always moving, but it's definitely a team effort. You know, and you know, I think, but everyone's aligned to, like, our common goal of, you know, driving the brand forward.
Yeah. I mean, it seems like Google, one more on this, but it seems like Google has so much data available to it, like, just in terms of live feedback through all of its products, that there may be marketing opportunities that emerge on the fly. Maybe they're, like, geographic specific or demographic specific, but suddenly you notice a trend in terms of perception, consumption, usage of your products that might generate a marketing idea that you can then act on very quickly.
Yeah.
Is that the case?
Yeah, I mean, for sure. We know, for example, like with Google Photos, you know, when people are more likely to use the product and, you know, what they search for example. And so those are key insights for us. And so we've built campaigns around that. So, for example, people take or save photos on the weekend, probably no surprise, but we have data around that. And so we can target our ads during the weekend. And we also know that people do this near national parks, and so then we can change our targeting and our creative to match that. Absolutely. It's definitely different than CPG, where you sort of market your product.
Slower data.
You sell it, and then it's just sort of like you sell it to a customer being a retailer, and it sort of disappears. You don't really necessarily know what happens in real time, to your point, without doing tremendous research.
Right, got it. Yep. Cool. So let's dial back and talk about some industry issues and broad trends facing the programmatic marketer. Big picture, Bob, what do you think we've learned about leveraging programmatic from a brand building standpoint, since it seems to me like a lot of your career has been in the branding arena?
Yeah, for sure. I think the big thing from my perspective is when programmatic started, and maybe I was as guilty as anyone else, this is this idea of just getting cheap reach and just leveraging that not a lot of thought into quality, or not a lot of mechanisms to really hit quality. And now I think, you know, the industry's advanced so much, you know, in terms of like fraud prevention, things like viewability. I think those are all great starts. I would just say what gets me really excited is going beyond things like viewability. I mean, viewability is clear. If people don't see your ad, it's hard to make an impact. The question is, you know, how do we go beyond that and find, you know, better moments of attention, places that are more contextually relevant, things along those lines. I think that's where the real opportunity is. And I think machine learning can help us, help us get there and figure out that puzzle.
Okay, great. How far along are we in maybe identifying those kinds of opportunities around better quality impressions and contexts, and going beyond viewability and fraud detection to this new opportunity to actually predict when an ad is going to connect with somebody on a psychological and emotional level?
I think we're making great progress. We've done some work where, you know, some experiments really where we've looked at using machine learning to try to go beyond viewability, where we've we've defined what we think are the most premium type of sites for a certain campaign or brand, and we look at other data points as well. And we've done these experiments where we've compared this machine learning to, the other ways that we do our programmatic buying, where we focus just on viewability or something along those lines, and just run, you know, A/B tests. And what we found is that, our reach has actually gone up. Cost per viewable CPM has dropped. And we found that our cost per point of lift of awareness and intent went up all at the same time. So you sort of have the opportunity to eat your cake, have your cake and eat it too, And so that's been really exciting, and still very early days, but, it's something that I think, and I've heard of other marketers experimenting in that realm as well.
Okay, great. Let's talk about creativity. One of the early sort of promises of programmatic was, hey, it lets you buy only the audience you want. And because you're buying a smaller, more efficient segment of prospects, it creates an opportunity to deliver a message, a creative message that's more suited to that audience. I think most people in the industry feel that we've achieved the former, but not the latter. On the creative side, there's just a lot of unrealized potential. But what do you think? Talk about the creative part of what we're all doing.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, just going back to what I said earlier about there's these silos between the media practitioners and the day-to-day brand managers. I think that silo has really held programmatic back, and it's really, we have this saying that the world's greatest media plan can't do much without strong creative, and so it's really how do you bring both of those together. So an example for us a couple years ago with Chromecast, we're looking to help launch that digitally, and it's a tricky proposition. Chromecast, right, is something you plug into the back of your TV, and then what's on your phone or computer will magically appear on screen. And so it's definitely something difficult to explain. And so we're trying to figure out, what are the right moments that we can personalize against. And what we found was that based on our data, we saw that a lot of the viewers would watch children's shows on the weekends. And so no one on our team had kids. And so we're like, oh, that's interesting. Obviously, we're not going to market to kids. Mm-hmm. But we're like, wow, I guess Chromecast is a entertainment device for parents. And so then we looked at it a little bit deeper, and we saw that it was mainly in the mornings on the weekends and then in the evenings. So in the mornings, probably when mom and dad are looking to sleep in, and then in the evenings, probably when mom and dad are trying to, prepare a meal or something along those lines. Mm-hmm. So, and we also had opportunities for partnerships. And so we're actually working with SpongeBob SquarePants. And so we came up with this really simple campaign idea that's Chromecast plus the power of SpongeBob will allow mom and dad to sleep in or prepare a meal in the evening. So we're able to sort of bring together some programmatic targeting. We target parental apps, very contextually relevant, just do some simple day parting and then slip in the right message at those moments.
A great example of taking some data insight and then letting that inform the targeting and the creative.
Yeah, exactly. And, all too often, I think what we see is that the media and the creative just aren't tight enough, and so you're not really taking advantage and making 1 + 1 = 3. And so we're really excited about that.
Okay. Measurement.
Yes.
In the branding arena. I mean, this has always been hard, and I think it's not getting any easier with GDPR and other sort of changes in the industry that appear to be breaking some of the old modes of identity management and user sort of tracking.
Yeah.
What's your assessment of measurement for brand marketing specifically, and how that discipline is changing?
Yeah, I mean, brand. I introduced myself as looking after digital brand. At the end of the day, though, we're here to market products, to ultimately sell them, get them into users' hands, right? And so we want to make sure our marketing is as effective as possible. And you sort of like are touching on it. There's a couple things that I think make this really tricky, right? One is having sort of a understanding who's actually seen your ads and who hasn't, and then actually seen who has purchased your product and then making the connection. And it's obviously very difficult. The nirvana in one day, at least from a marketer standpoint, is you're able to, know who's seen your ads and be able to do some very easy calculations to measure sales lift. Unfortunately, it's tricky, especially if you have retailers involved, then there's data lags and other things. And so where we're ending up and where a lot of marketers have been for a while is just, using regression models and marketing mix models. And, I think there are things going on there, that are making the tools better. At the end of the day, though, it still takes a while. It's still expensive, and in my opinion, it's still a little bit of a temperature check versus really telling you what is effective. And so what we really try to do is go beyond that to look for other leading indicators. We do attitudinal studies in market to sort of see how things are going, and we also do a lot of pre-market work, creative testing, and things along those lines. And so, strong believer that between pre-testing, creative, and understanding if you have the right, if your creative has the right to succeed, plus in-market attitudinal things, and then this sort of regression model, at the end, you can sort of triangulate and really understand what's working and what's not working.
Okay. Really interesting combination of imperfect systems.
Yeah, exactly. And that's why we're trying to triangulate it And then, yeah, I mean, and also too, you know, we have the five P's of marketing. So it's not
just— Now we're getting very old school.
Yeah, exactly.
I couldn't even name the five P's.
Yeah. let's just say that it's not just marketing, right? You know, it's not just your advertising that is driving your business. There's so many other factors that, you know, there's only
so much that too, factoring earned.
Competition, yes, everything.
Yeah, so. Right. Let's have a minute on TV. The old kind.
Sure.
And the new kind.
Sure.
Linear, connected, or whatever you want to call them. What do we know today about the effectiveness of television and its role in the mix for, not just for Google, but just broadly speaking, what's your assessment?
I mean, TV, you know, depending on what you're looking to do, as I sort of mentioned before, and how we think about optimizing our mix, it can be very effective. Google clearly advertises on television. We wouldn't do so if we didn't think it was effective. That said, you know, there is clearly changes going on, especially from a linear television standpoint. And you know, younger folks aren't watching TV. You have the cord cutters, cord nevers, folks along those lines. And so it's really important that you go to where your users are. And
Netflix doesn't sell ads.
They don't sell ads. They sure don't. Neither does HBO.
Yet.
But there are, you know, certainly other places, you know, Hulu, YouTube, Facebook, and others that have the scale that I think, you know, we need. And, you know, also, too, I think TV does get a little bit of a bad rap in that when people say TV's dying, it's really linear TV that's maybe not as healthy as it once was. But people still watch TV. It's just how it's distributed to TV has changed dramatically. And, you know, and so I think from a consumer standpoint, I love TV shows. We are in the golden age of TV. And so, I mean, I think the medium obviously will always be there. Long form content is very powerful.
Mm. What other channels just don't get the credit they deserve, perhaps? Out of home, podcast, radio?
Of course, podcasts, right?
You guys I listen to The Daily, and you guys are a major supporter there. So.
Yeah. I mean, podcasts are engaging. You can have a very natural fit. You know, in many ways, because podcasts are so diverse, you can really find your exact audience very easily on podcasts. So there's a ton of value there. I always say the medium that gets the least amount of credit that is really strong are banner ads.
Banner ads.
Yeah. So, I mean, if you use them right, you use the, you know, personalization and you bring in creative, you can do some really interesting things. You know, depending on your objective, it can be very powerful.
So. Mm-hmm. Interesting. Wonderful. Well, unfortunately, we're going to have to leave it there. But what a lovely discussion. Really great to have you in the studio, Bob.
Thank you so much. It was awesome.
Yeah. And thank you, listener, for tuning in. You know, we'll be here next week. We'll see you then.
Next week, tune in to hear more from 4C. Learn more about the company at 4cinsights.com/adexchangertalks. Produced by Bigfoot Music and Sound in New York City.